before we start, I want you to think about your worst fear. Write it down if you need to. But I want you to name. What is it? Maybe you can come up with 10 of them. Maybe you can't come up with one.
Well, turn to your handout, first page. We're going to talk about fear tonight. Later on, I hope to get to a case study and maybe unpack some of this. If you have any, you got any comments or questions or whatever, in the meantime, write them down or interrupt me in the process. But we've already talked about this before. We talked about this in track one. We talked about this in the first night of emotions. There's a spot here, Paul. And we learned that fear or emotion, many of the emotions that we have, are a result of the fall. And you remember this slide here, we talked about our life experience is in four dimensions, right? The blue represents our vertical dimension with God. The white is our internal dimension with ourselves, our thought life. The orange is our personal relationships, horizontal. So we got vertical, horizontal, I'm sorry, internal, vertical, internal, horizontal, and external with our environment. And if I started looking at this, I hadn't picked up on this until this last week, that I believe fear touches every single one of these. Fear didn't exist. We understand at least sinful fear and the angst or the anxiety did not exist until the fall. We're not going to find that fear did, there is a form of fear that existed before the fall. We'll unpack that a little bit. But fear, as we know it, the way we wrestle with it, is a result of the fall. But there are three types. We're going to talk about three types of fear tonight. We're going to first talk about natural fear. Then we're going to talk about sinful fear. Then we're going to talk about the answer to that, which is holy fear. Natural fear is a normal passion of the soul. Natural fear is normal, something everybody has. And I'm going to explain these in more detail. I just want you to understand there's three kinds. Sinful fear is the normal passion of the soul corrupted and perverted. And I'll explain what that means later. Number three, holy fear is the normal passion sanctified. Natural, sinful, and holy. And we'll unpack what that means here. Two types of natural fear. Page two. Natural fear. One, and I get these two words, I borrow these from Wayne Mack. One is prudent, and the other is awe. Prudent fear is the stuff that keeps us from falling off Pike's Peak, you know. When I was 18 years old, my cousin and I went to California, and he bought a bicycle, and he rode it down Pike's Peak. Can you imagine? Mm-hmm. And I drove behind him. When 40 years later, I just think, what was he? Because I could have run over him. I mean, I was close to running over him because my brakes were burning out, and prudence was not there at 18. But natural fear is the fear that grips you when you stand at the edge of a cliff, or when you realize that you've been going too fast. I was, same stage of life, riding a Harley, racing my friend with our girlfriends on the back down a country road. Now, my Harley didn't have a speedometer on, so I didn't know how fast I was going. You see why my mom died early. I got done, and he told me, he left me in the going 105. That's when I experienced fear, you see. That's what I'm talking about. Is that there was a rush of stings that went through me, thinking, what was I doing? It keeps us from dangerous circumstances normally. That's prudent fear. And everyone ought to have some of it. Yeah, right. You see why I'm losing hair and it's still white, you know. Yeah. Awe is something else. Natural, I believe it's natural. I believe Adam and Eve experienced it when they walked with God. It is what we call reverence, veneration, dread, or wonder. It's what you experience when you stand at the foot of Victoria Falls or Niagara Falls or at the edge of Grand Canyon, or you look up at the stars at night and you understand how big our Creator is, or just the universe if you're an unbeliever, and how small you are. I forget which astronaut it was that was out in space and coming around the moon, and he stuck his hand out like this and blocked out the Earth. And he said, somehow it does not make me feel big. That's what I'm talking about, the recognition of something that's much bigger than you are. Also, this veneration or dread comes after you've seen a huge destruction, like Haiti earthquake or Hurricane Katrina. Natural fear is just a part of us. Does that make sense? Two types of natural fear. Examples of natural fear in Scripture. Abraham was afraid of being childless. Jacob, afraid of Esau. Manoah, afraid of the angel. Disciples, afraid of the storm. Jesus, in the garden, was greatly distressed. And the idea of the original language is that he was experiencing the natural fear that the human goes through when you know you're headed for something very, very painful. Greatly distressed. And fear is, in this case, is like anger. It's not always sinful when you experience that realization that you are in for something dreadful. But it can quickly morph to sinful fear. Jesus obviously did not sin in his experience, but he sweat through it, remember? Fear becomes sinful. Natural fear becomes sinful fear in a variety of ways. And there may be more. If you think of them, you can help me here. But this is, for years, I have just used the acronym FEAR. This comes from Deuteronomy. We talked about this before. Fear, love, obey, worship, and serve God. That's what, and you can see it right, look up here. You can see it right here. It's already fear, love, obey, worship, and serve God. Deuteronomy, I think it's 6 through 10, commands those responses towards God. And fear becomes sinful when our fear of whatever it is out there, our natural fear, becomes greater than the fear of God. When our fear becomes greater than our love for God, or our love of God. When it prevents obedience, or when it causes us to disobey Him. And I put here, in our thinking and our actions, because we're going to learn later that worry is one of those things that prevents us from obeying God in our mind. When it causes us to disobey God in thoughts and actions. When it prevents the worship of God in thought and action. Fear becomes sinful when it prevents us from serving God, obeying God, serving God. Not sure that that's different, but the Bible just makes that distinction. When it flows from unbelief, when your fear is rooted in unbelief, it becomes sinful. And when it prevents you from loving and serving others. Remember, the New Testament, Romans 13, and Jesus says this, Jesus summarized, look at this, he summarized this in two words. Love God, love your neighbor. That's a pretty simple summary. Paul summarizes this in love your neighbor, assuming that if you don't love God, you can't love your neighbor. When it prevents us from loving and serving others, fear becomes sinful. You can summarize it this way. Go back to track one, class number four. Sinful fear fails prevents us, I should say, from fulfilling our life purpose to worship, glorify, and serve God. Please God. Does that make sense so far? Page 3, let's define it a little more. Definition of fear. A painful emotion or passion. This is Webster's. I like to use Webster's 1828 dictionary. I don't know if you ever use that or not. I tend to like to go back to his definitions, especially since he bases his definitions, almost every single word is based on a Bible verse of some kind, if you ever notice it. A painful emotion or passion excited by an expectation of evil or an apprehension of an impending danger. That's about as good as it gets. I don't know how to make it any better. Painful emotion or passion excited by an expectation or apprehension. It's our perception then of danger that produces this flight response, fight or flight response. The Greek word that is translated afraid or fear in the New Testament literally means, comes from the root meaning flight. That's typically the response. This goes back to what I was talking about earlier, last week. Peacemaker has a diagram where they show how to, what's it called, Neil? Remember? Yeah, I can't remember what they call it now. But on the one hand, it is an attack mode. The other hand is a flight mode in terms of how you solve conflict. Same idea here with this fear thing. Fear is a whole. This is the same definition I used for anger, just changing it for fear. Whole person, active response that comes from an assessment or perception of impending, I put the word displeasure, harm, danger, or evil. Because I believe that fear, in a lot of cases, is coming from, I don't want to experience anything unpleasant. May not be harmful. I just don't want to experience something unpleasant or something unwanted. Fear, a lot of the people that I talk to whose lives are driven by fear is just because I don't want to experience something that doesn't fit my paradigm. May not be necessarily harmful or evil. So there's a progression. And this again goes back to what we talked about before on how we think there's a progression of fear. It develops, first of all, in the mind. I'm going to argue this from all the way through tonight. I'm going to argue, not in a combative sense, but in a logical sense. I believe fear begins right here in the mind. And I'm basing that on what I understand as I observe fear in Scripture. Developed from an evaluation of the mind. And please argue back if you don't understand. I'm open to dialogue in this. Evaluation or a perception in the mind of a potential threat that will result in the experience of evil or harm. Again, I'm just trying to unpack, go a little deeper with what we've already said. I'm thinking about something coming, potential, would result in an experience of evil or harm or something I don't want, which then energizes the emotion. And if you remember the circle, we're gonna get to how that works in a little bit. Energizes our emotion to produce a volitional response, an act of the will. You go back to the way we're wired, and this happened to me 3 or 4 weeks ago. I had stayed home to study one day. I was home alone in the office, which is in the front of the house. I hear a dog barking. Maybe I told you this before. And I would say anger was the emotion I felt as I'm home alone, not really excited about a dog barking in my backyard. But I walk through the house to the bedroom, look out the window, and sure enough, there was a dog this far from our bedroom window, and he was looking right at me. And just, he was going at me full force, just barking like I was threatening him. So I went outside. Now this is an abused pit bull, just so you know what kind of dog it is. But I'm mad too. But the dog and I had a face off, and that dog was jumping at me literally that close to my knees and coming at me. Now let me tell you, there was some energy going on inside of me while that dog was coming at me, but I was just as mad as he was. Get out of my yard. You don't belong in my yard. My kingdom. Yeah, that's kind of the sinful anger that I was wrestling with. But my point is, I was thinking there was a potential threat that was only inches away, and there was all kinds of physiological things going on. See, I was afraid. I hadn't been that afraid for a long time, because I knew if I made one wrong move, I was toast. The smarter one. I just turned around and walked into the house real slowly when I realized that if I didn't do something, I was in serious trouble. But yeah, exactly. Deuteronomy 1 is a recount of that same story.
The same people, Joshua and Caleb, their evaluation in their mind, if they're focused on God, is totally different. Same perspective of it.
We talked about this 2 weeks ago. The same event, two different people, two radically different interpretations. Remember we had told the story about the snowstorm, waking up in the snowstorm. Same event, different perception, different emotion, different response. And I believe that fear is one of those emotions that happens so fast that we tend to think it doesn't start with our mind. And I'm going to continue to lay out, I believe it does, even though it happens so fast. Jim? So, what does that have to do with fear?
Are you looking at God, or are you looking at yourself?
Yeah. Yeah, if you have perfect peace, where's fear? Tell me.
Not there.
Not there. Absolutely not there. One of the most scary times I've had was, I was in the hospital, I don't know, 10, 12 years ago, I had a leaky appendix. It had leaked for weeks and then finally burst. And I was like really close to death. And they had something so full of antibiotic and morphine that I was just filled with terror at night. I was so afraid of the nighttime because when it got dark, I would start to
hallucinate, and it was very, very frightening. I knew I what was going on in my mind was drug induced, and it was that one verse, Jim, that helped me and that prevented fear from taking over. And I lived on that verse. I was in the hospital for 10 days, out for 3, back for 5 more. And it was that verse that kept me going. Fear is complex. Let's just admit it. It is complex, but I believe it, based on what Scripture teaches, it involves a progression of thoughts and choices. It originates in the mind. Bottom of page 3. God commands us not to give way to fear, and therefore this has to be something then that we can control. Otherwise, God would not tell us to control it. So we must, first of all, it is something that we can and must experience. He tells us to have the fear of God. It is something that we must respond to appropriately in natural fear. And thirdly, we must put away sinful fear. And God tells us and commands us to address all three. And yet it is powerfully physiological. And standing there with that dog, I was affected by that experience for 2 days because of the physiology that messed with other issues I got going on physically. It was a 2-day process getting over it with the pain that it ramped up in my body. It's physiological. The fear subsided once I got the sliding door closed. But the physiological effects of that fear experience that lasted for 2 days, I had pain level that was like double what I normally have. You also have increased heart rate, blood pressure, cold hands, sweating. Your senses increase when you're fearful. I don't know if you've ever been in a life-threatening situation, but things tend to slow down. You can hear things that you wouldn't normally hear. You can literally feel sound. That's natural fear helping protect you. Even guys in combat tend to get tunnel vision, where all you see is what's right in front of you, so there's no peripheral distractions. You see this significant physiological change because of the natural wiring that we have. Well, the ramifications of sinful fear are great, and I'm just going to throw out a few here. And we're going to unpack this a lot more. Middle of page 4, though, we're going to talk about 3 kinds of sinful fear, the 3 kinds that I personally, I just have chosen to talk about them. I think that these are the ones that are the most difficult in my interaction with people. Fear or worry and anxiety, I'm putting them in the same category. I think the Bible is translated interchangeably, worry and anxiety, from the same root. Panic attacks are a significant issue, and we're going to do a case study on panic attack if we get time. And then fear of man. And how many of you here have understand what I mean when I talk about fear of man? Not everyone knows. It's an uncommon phrase. So raise your hands. Okay. Fear of man is one of those. When I learned about fear of man, I don't remember how many years ago, I read Ed Welch's book, When People Are Big and God Is Small. I remember in that book, about, I don't know, maybe 3 chapters, I just thought, every believer needs to read this book. It is, I believe, a universal experience of fear. It has no respect of persons. And if we don't understand what it is and where it comes from and how to deal with it, we're going to, our walk with God is going to be impaired, and our ability to love people is going to be significantly hampered, I believe, if we don't understand the fear of man. Well, I'm going to start with worry. Bottom page 4.
this is my personal definition of worry. If you want to improve on it, please help me. Worry, I'm calling it the motions of the heart that afflict or distress the soul. It's those consuming thought patterns of our hearts that you just can't get off of them. It's that, you know, the gerbil cage, the swirl cage and the gerbil, swirl, wheel, and the gerbil. Can you tell me what I'm trying to say? Thank you. Thank you. That's what worry is where we just get on the roll and we can't get off of it and we just can't shut our minds off. It assumes. Now here's what makes worry so deadly and dangerous. It assumes. You might circle that word. Because worry is based on assumptions. And it assumes an awful lot of very arrogant things. It assumes a transcendent knowledge of what should have been done. There's a lot of worry that takes place of what you just said last hour or last week. We're fussed over things we did and shouldn't have done. A lot of times, when I first started thinking about this, I was thinking of worry in looking forward, but worry fusses over what's gone on in the past, too. And it seems it's a knowledge of what should have been done. And along with that knowledge, there's an accompanied demand. I want to rewrite the past. And you just do it over and over and over. If only. If only. Especially when you get our age, my age, I should say. My age, and you think about those motorcycle rides at 18 that ended up in serious damage. Two of my friends hit head on. One of them was killed in a motorcycle, messing around, you know. If only. Now, to me, that's a piece of this. It should have been done differently. And it also, what must be done. So it looks back, assuming something, and it looks forward. What must be done, accompanied by the knowledge of and desire for control of the future. You worry says, I know what's going to happen. I just know it. Or if you're especially omnipotent, you start to play out all of the potentials. And this and this and this and this and this. And then demand that it works out the way you want. Luke Priello says, worry is fear in the absence of present danger. If you look at worry like this, I just conclude that it is self-exaltation on steroids. I mean, it is to me, Denny last week defined pride as self-exaltation. I think worry, when we start looking at this, begins to get very, very ugly. Next page, top of next page. What does the Bible have to say about the depths of worry? Worry, quote, knows that God isn't powerful. Now think about this and think of, tell me if this isn't true. Worry knows that God isn't powerful or good enough to handle my future events. Worry, quote, knows that God wasn't powerful enough or good enough in my past. It's a result of failing at spiritual warfare. 2 Corinthians 10, 3 and 4 says, I need to throw down thoughts that exalt themselves against God. Worry is the fruit of an undisciplined mind. Worry is not from God. 2 Timothy 1, 7. We're going to talk about this later. God has not given us a spirit of what? Fear. But what has he given God's people?
Power to overcome.
Say it. Power to overcome. 1:7. What else is he given according to 2 Timothy 1:7? What else?
power, love, and a sound mind. If we are struggling with fear, is we don't believe God is powerful enough, we are not filled with God's love, and we are living with an undisciplined mind. Because worry is choosing to rebel against the command of Philippians 4, which says to think whatever is true. If we're thinking about what's true, look up here. We can't be thinking on based on assumptions. Worry, that's why worry is a sin. And what I'm going to do here at first is we're going to talk about 2 Timothy 3, says all scripture is given by God and breathed out by God and is profitable for doctrine. Yes, doctrine, teaching, that's the right way to think. Correction, reproof, instruction in righteousness. We're going to end with the instruction in righteousness on how to overcome this. So I just want to lay out some of these instructions here, what Scripture has to say about what we're talking about. I don't know if this does for you, but I'm sobered to learn about how what this really looks like, of the assumptions that's going on in my heart when I'm worrying, and how amazingly offensive this must be to God. Well, worry, we're going to talk about this in a little while. Worry says God hasn't given me the power. Worry says that God's power isn't enough. Remember this circle? Circle of responsibility, circle of concern. And what I believe worry does is it steps beyond the circle of responsibility and moves out here into God's area, which if we are living biblically, we're going to let this piece up to God. Trust God to handle what's out here, and pray and trust. Worry says, I don't believe what God says about prayer, and I can't trust God, therefore I have to take over. And what happens out here, along with worry, is the control that goes along with it. Fear, on the other hand, generally speaking, shrinks back and fails to step up and do what God wants because we are afraid of either people or the experience, the unknown, or we ourselves just don't, maybe we just don't want to exert ourselves for some reason or another. Worry is something I think we all deal with. And we need some help and hope with, and we're going to talk about that in the second half tonight. Any comments or thoughts on worry? Anybody? Exactly. That's exactly right. Philippians 4, and I got some homework on how this might help us in this area. Philippians 4. 4 through 9, and hopefully it'll make some, we're going to actually unpack this right at the end, talk about that. The put on, the put off here is worry, the put on is what Philippians 4 says, which is what, Neil?
Prayer.
Pray. Pray praise and give thanks. And think right. Well, worry can turn into a panic attack. That's a common
experience that is talked about these days. And so I want to offer a definition of what a panic attack might be. Worry is an extended experience of fear that just kind of consumes an individual. A panic attack is something that's extremely powerful. It has the physiology that fear experience has that's really ramped up, but it's short-lived generally. It's an overwhelming, debilitating fear that comes on suddenly and lasts for a brief period of time. So you get that physiology that really is frightening itself. It's overwhelming. It looks like a combination of these, and it doesn't include all these all the time. Rapid heartbeat, chest pain, can feel like a heart attack. Perspiration, sweating, shaking, shortness of breath, upset stomach, some kind of GI discomfort. You can feel that internal unsettling going on. Diarrhea, dizziness, chills, hot flashes. Butterflies in your stomach. You know what that's caused from? When you're experiencing anxiety, angst, excitement, or whatever, your digestive system turns off so that your body energy is focused on what you need to do. Isn't that amazing? We are fearfully and wonderfully made. And that butterfly feeling is you're feeling the off switch turn off so your body is focused on what needs to be done at hand. That is amazing. The butterfly feeling in your stomach is the digestive system turning off. And that's part of the physiology that goes on with panic attacks, or it can be. Chills, hot flashes, lightheadedness, numbness, tingling. When you think about this constellation of feelings, that can be pretty unsettling. And it's real, even though what you're afraid of may not be. This is powerful and this is real. The feeling of going, sometimes accompanied with a feeling of going crazy, losing control, natural desire to flee.
I see what you're saying with the panic attack, but I know myself, I've had anxiety attacks that I can't say that was a panic attack because it was anxiety of everything that was being piled on top of me that caused me to feel these anxiety attacks, which, I mean, I wasn't afraid of anything. I wasn't panicking over anything. I wasn't afraid of something happening. I was just feeling a lot of overwhelming issues going on, and I was having high anxiety. And
okay.
It caused a lot of what you're describing right there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we're going to unpack, I think, an understanding that might help you reinterpret what's going on. A feeling of going crazy. I don't know if you've ever been confronted with something extremely traumatic where the emotions was high enough that you felt like you were going crazy. That's scary. But I got a phone call, I don't know, 1993. I was home alone, and it was my sister-in-law. She was so distraught, I couldn't understand her. It took me quite a while to hear what she was saying. Her husband, this is Janelle's sister, her husband had just slit his wrist and killed himself. And she found him in the basement of their home, still warm. And she was trying to tell me what happened. We had just been with them. They live in St. Louis, just the week before. And so it was especially raw to me. And that feeling of I'm going crazy, and this was going on with that kind of news. You can't measure the distraughtness of that kind of phone call. panic attacks are more common in adults and women than they are in children and men. Just, I have no explanation as to why. It's just what I'm told. But here's the way I think that they develop. First, there's three stages. Obviously, you have an initial event. There's a first-time experience. But then typically there's a subsequent event of anticipatory fear. In other words, you remember how this experience came to you, and it is bad enough that you don't ever want to go through that again, and you start to think about the potential of having it. And then there's this fear of fear that begins to develop, because that experience was so difficult, I will do anything not to experience that again. And so the anticipation of something coming and what that fear experience might feel like just wells up and begins to take over. Fear of fear. I believe 1 Peter chapter 3 actually refers to something like that. Peter is talking in the context of suffering unfairly and unjustly, and he is telling servants to submit to their slaves, to submit to their masters. He's telling citizens to be subject to their ungodly authorities, because Christ suffered unjustly. And then he says, likewise, women. He goes right to the woman. And he tells the woman to submit to her husband, even though her husband is ungodly. And then he goes on in verse 6, as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, you are her children if you do good and do not fear anything that is frightening. You see that? Peter recognizes that fear is something that none of us want to experience, and fear of fear can prevent us from obeying God. These are the three levels of in general what panic attack looks like. The initial event, the fear of a recurring event, which moves into prevention. I'll avoid it, I'll control my environment, I'll make sure it never happens again. It's so bad, I don't want to experience it again. Negative feelings. These are quotes from an actual doctor, women coming to him, talking about this doctor is a OBGYN, women coming to him for help. I've got negative feelings that periodically plague me. Help me, is the plea here. I don't know what's taking over my body. You get there. That's a key thing. I don't know what's taken over my body, but I need some medication. There's something, my body is doing something, and there seems to be a disconnect between what my body's doing and what my mind is doing. That's what makes this so difficult to deal with. Well, we're gonna talk about, in fact, let's do that right now. Well, let's keep going. We'll come back to this, because I want to do a case study on a panic attack a little bit later. But I want to keep going here. Fear of man. Third thing. We got just real itself, panic attack, fear of man. Three of the general themes of fear that I have typically had to deal with. Wayne Mack has a great workbook called Fear Factor, if any of you want to unpack this in great detail. It's called Fear Factor. This tile here came from him. He talks about the effects of the fear of man. He calls it a tornado in your soul. I think that's a very descriptive term. What is fear of man?
I just realized I didn't define it. What is fear of man? Chris? Remember earlier on I said if sinful fear flows out of unbelief, that's an example of I don't believe God can sovereignly orchestrate my future events, and even if I'm fired, he just may have a plan in this that would be better for me. Come on. Good. Excellent. Placing more importance on someone else's statements, thoughts about you, what they say, what they would do, versus what God has done, God has said, God thinks. And just look at this. Here's God. Here's what God says. Here's what this person says and represents. And fear of man does this and places my view of this person and my view of this person's response towards me, what they think of me, more important than what God thinks of me. Does that make sense? Susan?
Sunday, Luke 12:4, I tell you, my friends, do not fear those who kill the body and after that have nothing else they can do.
Luke 12 is an excellent example of what fear of man looks like. I wasn't there. See, now fear of man could tempt me to not admit I wasn't in church, because I would be worried about what you think of me. Good. That's excellent. Fear of man generally has some kind of piece to it where we desire the acceptance or praise of somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. The Pharisees were an excellent example of what fear of man looks like in a religious sense. Doing the right thing for the wrong reason. Going with bags of money and showing people what a giver you are. So people will think well of you. All the while, again, look up here. I want people to see me and think well of me. When God sees your heart, this God sees your heart and is sickened by it. That's one side of it. The other side being, what did you say, avoiding?
Avoiding pain or rejection.
Yes. Yeah. So on the one hand, acceptance. The other hand, rejection. Now, do you want God to reject you? Think of how twisted this gets, because if we go for the praise of men and result in being rejected by God, that's pretty serious. And yet fear of man prompts us and hijacks what we really know. If we think about it, we would never do that. Do you?
Next 5:29, you must obey God rather than man, and you were put on trial for their preaching.
and fear of man could have stopped them. But why didn't it stop them? Because they looked at this and said, this is far more important. Shadrach, Meshach said what? You know, we will not be careful in this matter, is what they said. What does he mean? King James language, we will not be careful means I will not be afraid of you. My God can deliver me, but if not, too bad. That's fear of God overcoming fear of man.
Queen Esther.
Oh my, Queen Esther. Yeah, yeah. What a great story. Full of the potential of fear of man, and because she never succumbed to it. It is. Yeah, fear of man is self-love. Back to self-exaltation. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. The definition of Sunday, that fear of man can only exist where fear of God is weak.
Yep.
That was the...
We're gonna unpack that some more. Fear of man, according to Wayne Mack, is deceptive. It promises something it can't deliver. I want the praise of man when I, in fact, get the rejection of God, the disapproval of God. It's distracting, it's destructive, it's discouraging. Deuteronomy 1, Moses said, fear not, neither be discouraged. You see the connection. Fear of man discourages. And that's in the context of what Tom was saying earlier in Numbers 14. They were discouraged because of the fear of man. It can lead to depression. Elijah was afraid of Jezebel and produced intense depression. Leads to grumbling. Deuteronomy 1 again. Read that sometime and see what see the mixture of truth and error in Deuteronomy chapter 1, and see what it does to their emotions. That's a just a phenomenal expression or example of what bad thinking, a mixture of good, right thinking, true thinking, and bad thinking can do to the emotions, and what it does to then the responses. Stirs up jealousy and paranoia. Saul and David. The fear of man. Saul was upset because Saul has killed his thousands, but David, and he was saying, wait a minute, I should be up here, David's up here. He ended up going crazy. He's trying to kill the guy that was actually saving his kingdom. Leads to compromise and disobedience. Saul again. 1 Samuel 15. This was his demise. Fear of man. I feared the people. What he said, what he told Saul. And he ended up losing his kingdom because of the fear of man. Because he didn't fear God. Hypocrisy. Paul confronted Peter because of his hypocrisy. Why was he that way? Because of the fear of man. He feared the Jews and withdrew from the Gentiles. It creates trouble in their heart, panic, trembling, fainting heart. Deuteronomy chapter 20, verse 3. This desire to have other people accept us, respect us, think well of us, prevents an awful lot of obedience and serving people. Fear of man lays a snare. Proverbs 29. But, you see, again, now you see what Susan was saying. Fear of man and trust in God are opposite. Deuteronomy 29:25. I say it this way sometimes. You do the right thing for the right reason regardless of the outcome. Regardless of what people think of you. I tell you, my friends, do not fear those who kill the body. Luke 12, verse 4. Susan just quoted that. Genesis chapter 12. This is really a sad circumstance, but I wonder how many of us would have done the same thing. He was afraid. Abraham was afraid.
How many of us do the same thing?
Yeah.
Not would have.
Yeah. What's he doing? Abraham and Sarah. When the Egyptians see you, they will say, what's the assumption?
What they would say.
Yes, he's looking in the future, predicting the future. This is what they will say. How does he know?
He's saying.
He is. He is making an assumption. He had no idea what that, I forget now who the king was. I don't know. He had no idea how he was going to respond. He was pretty humbled after this. They will say this is his wife. And then, there's another assumption. They will kill me, but they will let you live. You see, now he's made three assumptions so far. So now he starts the plan. Telling you my sister, which was true, was half true, half sister, that it may go well with me because of you. His fear of man and love of himself put his wife at risk. It did. It happened twice. Yeah, and you know, when I'm in my flesh, I can say, what was up with him? He did it twice. Didn't he learn? How many times, like Susan said, how many times do we do this? Fear of man. Fear of man is contagious, too. Look at this. The officers will speak further unto the people, and they shall say, what man is there that is fearful and faint-hearted? Go home. Go home. Because his brethren's heart would faint as well. Fear of man is contagious. You're around a fearful person, you become fearful. I think it is. I think it is. You know why? Galatians 6, you that are, when a brother or sister is overtaken in a fault, you that are spiritual, restore such to one in a spirit of meekness, lest you yourself also be tempted. When you hang out with a fearful person, you're going to be tempted to fear. When you're hanging out with an angry person, like a dog, you're going to get angry. Even angry dogs rub off on you if you're doggish in your heart. You're right, Neil. It does rub off. Abraham says, I did it because I thought. See him explain his fear? He understood where it came from. I thought there was no fear of God at all in this place. Guess where there was no fear of God? In his own heart. Yeah. And we are just like that. We can point fingers out there and not realize just how much we are infected. They will kill me because of my wife. Again, there's this unbiblical thinking. John 12 again. For the fear of the Pharisees, they did not confess it, so they would not be put out of the synagogue. What were they wanting? What was it that they would not be put out of the synagogue? What was their desire? They love the glory that comes from man more than the glory that comes from God. And every time we submit to the fear of man, we're in the same boat. That to me is sobering. But what's at the heart of fear? Just fear in general. We talked about worry, we talked about panic attacks, we talked about the fear of man. In a broad brush sense, let's look at some of the reasons that men are fearful. The Bible says, guilty conscience brings fear. The wicked fool no one pursues. The sinners in Zion, the sinners are afraid, trembling. Has seized the godless. Guilty conscience brings fear. Middle of page 7. Judgment from God brings fear. Leviticus, I will set my face and strike you down. Those who hate you shall rule over you. You shall flee when no one pursues you. It's a result of judgment. Great terror. They are in great terror where there is no terror. I forget where I found that. God scatters the bones of him who encamps around you. You shall put him to shame, for God has rejected them. just this fear of judgment, and judgment itself brings fear. Well, this is where we get some real serious, very common fears that people struggle with. The heart of fear is rooted often in unbiblical standards. This is I just put these together based on conversations that I've had. I don't know that I had anybody in particular in mind when I wrote these, but these are just the common things that I hear from people. Unbiblical standards. I must perform flawlessly. I hear that probably more than anything else. I must be absolutely perfect all of the time, every day. That creates fear. Why does that create fear? Tell me. It cannot be done. I must meet everyone's approval. Why does that create fear? It can't be done. I must be liked by everyone or by someone in particular. Why is that a fear creator? Can't be done. I must be beautiful. Not bad enough, but as I define beauty. Why does that create fear? It can't be achieved. I must forgive myself. Why does that create fear? Because it can't be done. The Bible does not command that. I was listening to the radio Thursday or Friday while I was making lunch. I happened to be home that day for some reason at noontime. I turned on the radio. Call-in talk show. Here's this woman who was in her 50s, and she was wrestling with an abortion that she had at 16 years old. And had this guilt. She said, I can't forgive myself. And the kind folks, well-meaning folks, compassionate folks said, you need to forgive yourself. She says, I can't. Their answer, you need to forgive yourself. How do you forgive yourself? They didn't tell her that. Their answer to her pain, 40-year-old pain, was go work in a pregnancy center. Save babies. Unbiblical standard. How many babies is enough? I was angry. Angry enough that I'm going to track this woman down. I want to talk to her. Because what she needs to do. And she was also 16 years old. She said, I could have stopped. My mom took me. My mom told me to get the abortion. And she said, I could have stopped them. I could have resisted. They said, wasn't your fault. What harm to this lady's soul? Because what I believe she should have heard was, yes, you should have resisted, and you didn't. But there's forgiveness. There is a Jesus Christ who died who can forgive you of your sin. Tell him that you are grieved over your sin and ask for forgiveness and receive it and go away free, forgiven, sin erased, record gone. You are forgiven. No need for this because the King of Kings has died for you. That's hope.
Why are we hearing that on Christian radio? Why aren't we hearing what you just said? It's a rhetorical question.
Yeah.
But it's true.
Unbiblical standards bring fear. This woman, they left her. Now, what's she going to do? More performance, more performance, more bondage. My husband must think of me as the ultimate woman. My wife must believe that I'm the man. Again, Are you? My goodness. Let's just admit. Let's not take ourselves so seriously. What do you see here? Nothing good in me but God. But God. And because of Christ, because of who He is, the standards that need to be met are met. And now I am free to love people the way love of God just comes out. My parents must believe in me, must accept me, they must be there for me, and since they were not there for me, then I am somehow less of a person. My uncle passed away last Monday, 81 years old. We buried him yesterday. He never had a dad. He was 10 months old when his dad died. My mom was 6 years old. 8 kids on a farm, and a greedy uncle took the farm away from them and sent them packing to town. My uncle never saw a father, never had a father figure. But he raised he raised 3 boys and a girl, and you should have heard the celebration we had yesterday. And at the gravesite, he had about 14 grandkids in a circle singing praises. It was the greatest celebration of death I've ever seen. Never had a model, but turned into an awesome father. Didn't have it. Didn't need it. Unless so-and-so does this and this, I can't. You hear that often. Unbiblical standards. You hear this one. I put this in red because this one to me is so, I think, tells us something is dreadfully wrong with our hearts. I am so angry at myself. Yeah, that's a great. I'm glad you brought that up, Paul. Or Paul brought it up. Your name's Neil. Yeah.
What's that reference?
1 Corinthians 4. Tell him, Neil, where's the verse?
1 Corinthians 4, verses 3 through 5.
I don't see it. Is it 7 Corinthians 4?
1 Corinthians 4.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Yep, got it.
Not just the small things, but very small.
And again, what you're seeing here is Paul amazes me as how high he holds up God and God's glory. He doesn't flinch. And he's comparing God, God's purpose and God's glory to his life constantly. And he says, he describes his life experience of all this pain and suffering, and you know what he calls it? He takes all the pain and suffering he had that he talks about in 2 Corinthians and puts it down into 3 words. Momentary light affliction as it's compared to an eternal weight of glory. That's why he can say things like this. The small thing to have somebody else criticize me. But back to this thing on angry at myself. We got to weep for our sin, run to the cross for forgiveness, and leave it there. Anger itself is rejecting the gospel. Anger itself assumes pridefully that I ought to be better than I am. That's serious business. The root of fear. Another root. Unbiblical saviors. If we have unbiblical standards, we have unbiblical savior. I must do it myself enough in order. I must achieve such and such in order to be forgiven. I must do penance or pay for my violations. You see this often with women that are manifesting what are called eating disorders. There's a gospel issue going on. Until I, whatever, achieve something, I will not forgive myself. And again, here's this, unless so-and-so does such and such, I can't. Same idea. Unbiblical systems come out of unbiblical standards. Unless I, or until I experience something, I can't forgive myself. I keep bringing it up because I keep hearing it. Binging and purging, starving and overeating, these are all, I think, manifestations of unbiblical standards, unbiblical saviors, unbiblical systems. Self-loathing, self-punishment. Those generate life-gripping fears. Bible page 8. The heart of fear is a lack of the fear of God. It started in the rebellion in the garden. It's a result of unbelief. Romans 8:28 isn't true. Fear says Romans 8:28 isn't true. That all things work for my good. Lack of faith in the character and promises of God. Fear says that God isn't trustworthy, and therefore his promises are empty. And because of I believe that God isn't trustworthy, I question his power and providence. Lack of love for God. If you love God, you'd obey him. Perfect love casts out fear. The worst case fear experience known to man, 1 John 4, is eternal separation in hell. That's worst case. And John puts that against love and says the love of God overcomes worst case fear. Judging God to be less than he is. God is wimpy. Fear judges God to be less than God. So ultimately, bottom line, the heart of fear is the essence of pride and idolatry. That's why I think God takes so much time in scriptures to tell us to fear not. What I did, and this I think is on the website, I put together several years ago. This is something that you may be interested in. This is four pages of just scriptures in the King James language where it says, fear not. Several years ago, I was ministering to a middle-aged man who was gripped with fear, and I just said, well, what does the Bible have to say about fear? He thought about it. He's pretty intellectual, very knowledgeable guy. He says, well, there's an awful lot of fear nots in the Bible. That's what prompted this listing. But what has struck me is the context of the fear nots. And I would encourage you to take a look at that. And we'll get to that maybe a little bit later here tonight. Let's take a quick break, and we'll pick up here in about 5 minutes.